marine fish and shellfish port fishing rule simplification. This is a decision. Gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Commissioners, and Director. My name is Philip Dion, and I'm the department's lead for forage fish research and management. And today I'm joined by Dave Lowry, who is our Puget Sound marine finfish science lead, and Chris Eardley, who is our Puget Sound shellfish policy coordinator. And our topic today is rule simplification for forage fish, marine fish, and shellfish. Pass it over. There we go. Before we review our rule simplification proposals, I'd like to review the process and the timeline, and then we'll have time for questions and public testimony after our proposals. This is the third phase of the of the Wild Futures Initiative. The previous phases included rule simplification for freshwater sport fish regulations and rule simplifications for salmon fisheries, both in marine and freshwater. The timeline for this third phase, we began reviewing and developing proposals at the beginning of 2019. The proposals were posted online for public comment in September and were online until mid-October. Public meetings were held in Olympia, Mill Creek, and Port Townsend before we briefed the commission in Olympia in mid-October. And today we are presenting our proposals for decision by the commission. If these proposals are approved, they would take effect on July 1st of 2020. The first of the sport fishing rule simplification proposals we'll discuss today pertain to forage fish. All of the proposed changes for forage fish rules are technical or clerical in nature, meaning that they do not affect the current fishing regulations and are primarily intended to streamline or improve the WAC language or structure. The changes that we are proposing are moving the forage fish possession limit language from the personal use general WAC to the personal use forage fish WAC, including both freshwater and saltwater forage fish limits in the same WAC, and simplifying the language throughout the WACs by removing redundant language prohibiting Ulacon smelt retention, clarifying closures for smelt dip net fishing, and clarifying both fishing gear and forage fish species description throughout the WACs. During our public meetings, we received no comments, and there were no attendees with regards to the forage fish. We did, however, receive a single written comment. However, this comment was with regards to the use of forage fish as bait and did not pertain to the harvest of forage fish. If you have any questions, be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, we can move on to marine finfish.
No questions?
Thank you.
All right. So Phil outlined the process that was taken. This was the same process for all three species groups that we're going to address today. For marine finfish, we had one major proposal, which was to standardize the rules east and west of the Bonilla Tatchfish line. So this is marine area 4A and 4B, as it's often referred to. And there's a series of proposals that pertain to different species here that I'll walk through, but all of them are aimed at trying to standardize the fishing regulations on the east and west side of this line. So the first of those was to change the retention regulations, and so this modified the bottom fish possession limits. It moved the total aggregate limit from 10 to 9, but it increased the limit for rockfish. So it went from 6 to 7. In addition to that, there was this change where rather than just black and blue or Deakin rockfish, we also allowed retention, or we're also proposing to allow retention of yellowtail and widow rockfish. This is because those populations have been assessed as being healthy. So to take some of the pressure off of black rockfish, we're adding these species into the rockfish retention limit. We also changed, and I'll talk about this on the next slide, but you'll see that we're using blue slash Deakin now instead of just blue rockfish. This is in recognition of some genetic work that was done that showed that they're actually two different species. So that was a change throughout the WACs. And then also allowing 12 circuit perch a day, again, just to standardize between the two sub-areas.
One moment, please. Commissioner Anderson?
Yes. So the blue slash Deacon are different, or the black and the blue slash Deacon are different?
So we used to refer to them simply as blue rockfish. Yeah. We now recognize that there's blue and Deacon rockfish, okay. Two separate species, but they're very hard to identify in right. the field.
On the yellowtail and widow rockfish, were those at one point had some sort of status and have recovered, or we just didn't understand the strength of the population?
It's more a lack of understanding or a lack of assessment of those species. Yeah. They've also, while their populations were never necessarily imperiled, they have gotten stronger over the last several years, and they've been an untapped resource in this area, with the focus being on the black and the blue rockfish.
Thank you.
So,
okay.
I'm curious if you're sort of supplementing with the two species to sort of make up for the black rockfish. I know this is just conjecture, but do you feel like the anglers, are they going to be interested in that fisheries? I mean, you know, do they taste good? I don't know what I'm asking exactly, but is yeah. it really a, you know...
So when it comes to rockfish, there's essentially two different groups. There's one group that stays down on the bottom and associates tightly with rocks, and then there's another group that stays up in the water column. The blues, blacks, yellowtails, deacon, widow, all of these species are midwater species. Oh. And even when we've allowed retention of black rockfish, people do bycatch these species. So they are encountered, and it is a, you know, they are palatable.
Okay.
They're definitely edible. So. Any other questions on that? Okay. So again, continuing to try and standardize rules on either side of this line, this is that retention of yellowtail and widow rockfish, again, because the populations are strong. This difference here, though, is allowing retention of those species when fishing for salmon. So when recreational salmon fishing is open and allowed, you're then also able to retain these species. Prior to this proposal, all rockfish were closed, again, other than blue and or blue deacon and black. All rockfish were closed east of the Bonilla Tatoosh line. So this is a new addition, again, based on the strength of this population.
Just a clarification
then. So the widows and the yellowtail would be, you could retain them outside the 20-fathom line?
Correct.
While salmon fishing?
Yes.
Okay.
And again, this is just adding opportunity and standardizing to what's currently the practice west of the line. Okay. The other ones, or another set of proposals, has to do with lingcod retention. And this shifts the lingcod fishery to allow approximately an additional month of fishing pressure on the early part of the season. In Marine Area 4B, that's, again, already the practice in Marine Area 4A, so it's just a standardization of that. And it also removes the minimum size limit. Both of these proposals are in this package because the lingcod population on the outside, the ocean lingcod population, is connected to this area. And it's actually more tightly connected to this area than it is to the inside Puget Sound stock. And the fish on the outside, this ocean population, is doing quite well. And so, again, standardizing this, allowing for this opportunity, is justified by our current status assessment of lingcod. I know that there was a question about the removal of the lower size limit, and essentially, with enough lingcod around, what fishermen tend to do is high grade to the bigger fish. There's not necessarily a need for them to keep the smaller fish or have a desire to keep those smaller fish. And when there's few fish around, we're always trying to keep those smaller fish in the population so that they can grow and contribute to the next generations. Inside Puget Sound, there are few enough fish that we've got a concern there, and we need that lower size limit so that people aren't taking the small juveniles. On the outer coast, though, that's not so much a concern. The population is doing quite well, and there's high survival of these juveniles if they're discarded.
That was my question.
Yeah.
And they seem to do
lingcod are very hardy. Anybody who ever fished for them knows they're very hardy. There's not a concern about their discard mortality.
This might be a management issue, or at least a data issue. should this go forward with no minimum size? I guess my question is whether or not there's some way to monitor that assumption that, you know, that there'll be a high grading or that there won't be the impact on the lower, on the smaller lane cod. Because I can imagine, I mean, you're out there and you've got a 22-inch tape and you know, or 24-inch tape or whatever you're going for that, but there'll be a propensity probably to keep a 20-inch or a 19-inch or whatever, and I'm just curious what that really will mean, and that if you've thought through how you might monitor that in the going forward, like some form of voluntary reporting or something more accurate than just normal.
So our ocean sampling program does creel sample anglers out on the outer coast. We certainly could look into incorporating a question there or a measurement of ling cod that are landed or something to that effect. Yeah. All right. And then the last part of this, again, is kind of an administrative thing. It was just the way that the WAC is worded. It wasn't clear that Hood Canal, Marine Area 12, is closed year-round to ling cod. And it was just kind of an oddity in the wording. It seemed as if it might be open parts of the year. So we've clarified that or cleaned that language up. And then the remaining changes here are small changes, technical, clerical changes. Being more consistent with the terminology that we use. So rather than calling it a marine area or a catch record card area or various iterations of those words, we've just standardized it. And again, replacing blue rockfish with blue / deacon rockfish. And then the final things were a couple of, again, technical clerical changes, reorganizing species lists so that they read a little more clearly, reorganizing the food fish list and updating some scientific names. Again, none of these changes affect the WAC or the fishing regulations in any way. It doesn't change the way that we prosecute the fisheries. It's just cleaning up language in the WAC. As Phil mentioned, we did have three public meetings, and we had no attendees at those meetings, not just for forage fish, but also not for marine fish. We did receive two written comments online. The first was someone opposed largely to the ling cod changes, saying that they were concerned about the rule language and possible unintended consequences. We spoke directly with the person who made that comment, and they thought that this comment was being made from the public, or the rule change proposal was coming from the public. So they didn't realize that having been staff generated, it was based on a sound stock assessment and other things. So we've resolved that issue with the individual. The other one was a comment essentially unrelated to the process at hand here. It was trying to get multiple halibut fishery days in a row. And that's something that we passed on to the halibut fishery managers and that they'll be using for the Pacific Council process that sets those rules. So if there are any additional questions, I'd be happy to take those, or I'll pass this along.
Any questions?
We still have shellfish.
Shellfish. One more.
Good afternoon. I'll revisit with the shellfish proposals we discussed in October. The first one concerns daily limits within our echinoderm recreational fisheries. Currently, the agency manages with three different daily limits for urchins and sea cucumbers. The proposal from staff is to simplify and streamline into a single daily limit for green urchins, purple urchins, red urchins, and sea cucumbers. The proposed daily limit is 18. Again, this is a simplification and is also in line with conservation objectives. The second part of this proposal concerns pink and spiny scallops. These are species that are harvested in a dive fishery. The current daily limit is presented as a weight-based daily limit, which presents some logistical challenge for species that are harvested while diving. We're proposing to switch to an easier-to-use quantity-based daily limit. This is a simplification for harvesters to comply with and for enforcement as well. The proposal is a daily limit of 40 scallops, which also happens to align with existing daily limits for hard shell clams in the intertidal.
Any
Continuing on with echinoderms and scallops, the second proposal discusses minimum size limits, or size limits in general. Currently, the agency does not specify a minimum size limit for pink and spiny scallops, and we're proposing a minimum size limit of 2 inches for those species. The same is true of green urchins and purple urchins, as well as red urchins. We're proposing a minimum size limit of 2 1/4 inches for green and purple urchins, and of 3 1/4 inches minimum for red urchins, with a maximum of 5 inches. These size limits, both minimum and the proposed maximum for reds, seek to preserve reproductive opportunity before these species enter a fishery. Third proposal, again with relating to sea cucumbers and urchins, concerns defining closure areas for recreational fisheries for these species. The proposal at hand would make it unlawful to fish for sea cucumbers and sea urchins recreationally in 8 conservation areas distributed throughout Puget Sound. These closure areas serve as valuable reference areas for managers to monitor population status, absent fishing pressure, and also serve to preserve spawning stock and densities within the areas that supports populations throughout the region. The fourth proposal concerns elimination of requirement to retain eastern softshell clams. These are, as the name implies, a species that is native to the east, as in the East Coast. They are they've been introduced to Washington State. They are occasionally encountered by harvesters while digging for other, more targeted intertidal species. The current rule requires that harvesters retain this species when encountered incidentally or otherwise. And it's a staff opinion that this is unnecessarily punitive on the recreational harvester that may not be targeting this species, and as a non-native, though non-invasive, species, staff opinion is there is no conservation need for this rule. So this is a simplification.
So is the effect of this simplification rule that the softshell clam is not retained, or it is retained but not counted toward the limit?
The proposal makes no change to the daily limit requirement. So if this species is retained and taken home, it would continue to count towards the 40 clam daily limit. It just it removes a requirement that it be retained if it's encountered incidentally and counting towards the daily limit, and thus reducing the opportunity to take the species that's actually being targeted.
Is there a commercial fishery?
For urchins?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good.
Yes, we have an actively managed fishery for red urchins and green urchins as well. Our fifth proposal concerns clarification of lawful gear that can be used when harvesting geoduck in the intertidal. Geoduck are a popularly targeted species in the intertidal. The pursuit of this species often includes the use of a cylindrical or tube device to prevent cave-in of holes while pursuing the clam that is a deep-digging clam species. We have inquiries from enforcement and harvesters on a fairly regular basis about whether this is a legal gear type, and if so, what are the parameters that define what's legal. This proposal seeks to define that, yes, this is a lawful gear type, but also to define it what it is as a non-mechanical device, and also to define a maximum diameter, permissible diameter for these devices. The sixth proposal concerns defining a caliper measurement. Caliper measurement or a caliper device are terms we refer to throughout WAC concerning how to standardize the measurement of various species for minimum size limits, for example. But nowhere in our WACs is a definition offered for what that means. This proposal is to define a caliper measurement and a caliper device for clarification. Our seventh proposal, another clarification. WAC 223.30.020 describes lawful pot escapement component fibers. These are the fibers that hold escapement panels in shellfish pots in place. If a pot is lost, they are of a biodegradable material, which over time allows for the pot to be deactivated and an escape opportunity for animals that might be trapped as the pots continue to fish. Currently, the definition defines or specifies that materials that can be used must be composed of 100% cotton or other natural fiber twine. This proposal, based on some available research that we have and that our department has done with some partners to explore other natural fiber twines, then seeks to clarify or define what other acceptable fiber types are, in this case, hemp, jute, or sisal, which are found to be to biodegrade at acceptable rates to be effective as well. Lastly, we have a series of 15 technical and clerical changes, as explained by my colleagues in their packages. Similarly, these do not alter the intent of the regulations or rules. They are designed to clarify and improve language, to streamline WAC, and also to kind of reorganize things so that it's easier to navigate and understand. As with Forage Fish and Marine Fish, with whom we teamed up for public meetings, we did not have attendees for those public meetings, but we did receive a couple of written comments. The first one we discussed in October, it was positing that consideration should be given to allow a bonus retention of eastern softshell clam, again, that non-native clam species that we discussed a moment ago, similar to Atlantic salmon or other unwanted species. We discussed in October that staff at one time had explored that tool and discontinued it due to problems with abuse and due to the difficulty of discerning a juvenile horse clam from this eastern softshell clam as well. Any questions about that comment or further discussion? Okay. This second comment was actually a series of three specific points. Firstly, the one comment was relating to our definition of possession limit, or excuse me, the description as it being unlawful to possess softshell crab. The existing language specifies that it applies to commercial fishing. The proposal that we have in front of you is to duplicate that language for recreational fishing and put it within the recreational WAC. We explained to the commenter that was part of the plan, and so that would cover both commercial and recreational. That's in the works. Second comment concerned our proposal to strike the word apparently. This is a clerical change, apparently, from the definition of a relic shell in terms of defining it as something was naturally deceased versus something that was, for example, shucked or otherwise killed by a human. The commenter is concerned that striking the word apparently makes a definition a little bit too tight and puts undue burden on the harvester to prove that the animal they're harvesting died of natural causes. In follow-up with our enforcement on this point of concern, enforcement is supportive of our proposal as written. The desire was to reduce ambiguity in the way it was written. Enforcement did not see a need to object to the proposal we have put forth, so we continue to support what our proposal describes. Lastly, a The commenter pointed out some language that describes possession limit and what it entails for shellfish in the preamble to our daily limits WAC. Specifically, the concern was over the term at any time. And so rather than referring to possession limit as something that is considered for in transit or in the field, it refers to at any time. The concern is that this would also apply to shellfish that are held at home lawfully, that maybe were harvested the day before or as part of somebody else's daily limit. Staff have done some outreach to enforcement to explore whether this is a proposal worth further consideration, and it does seem like it warrants some additional investigation. At this time, staff is committed to continue doing some background work to make sure that the genesis of this is fully understood and that it has full support among enforcement, as well as checking in with the AG's office and with a desire to avoid unintended consequences on that. And so we're committed to investigating that further and bringing this back to the commission at a future date.
Just real quickly back to the merchants. You mentioned that there's closure areas in the eight conservation closure areas. Because I don't spend a lot of time on saltwater portions and regulations. There is a page that describes them that fishers can easily find that identifies these closed areas. Is that in the fishing pamphlet?
It is not for sport fishing right now. It would be if the commission adopts the proposal, and we have materials that do exist as the closure areas also they currently exist in the commercial fishery, and so we have tools that we could use to communicate that. Enforcement's also familiar with the areas as well.
Okay. So there will be a method so they can identify those areas so that they're not fishing in those areas.
Yes. Yep.
Recreationalists. Okay. And then also, isn't there a page that has actually color photographs that describe the different rockfishes?
Yes, I believe there is a rockfish, salmon. I think we've got a number of species in there that are described with photos.
Right. Okay.
Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to wait until questions, but it's kind of related to what's been brought up. But why don't we let him finish, and then I.
Okay. So staff are recommending commission adoption of the forage fish, marine fish, and shellfish sport fishing rule simplification proposals as presented with two modifications. These are both on the shellfish side. as part of the reorganization of the WACs for simplicity and improved structure, there are some cross-references within those WAC sections that would no longer be accurate. We had a proposal as part of our clerical changes to update language in 220, 330, 150 to make sure that cross-references are accurate. Our follow-up proposal is to make some further adjustments to that language, another clerical change, for improved clarity and consistency with the language in RCW. The second proposed modification is concerning 220, 330, 110, and 140. These are WACs that describe our oyster and clam annual seasons. We have retracted those WACs from this package because of a timing conflict with our 2020 season setting. We need to have those WACs open so we can get seasons set in time for 2020. And the plan would be to carry forward the clerical changes as part of that process.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you because it's been clear through this entire process that rule simplification, the process itself, is not simple. That last slide was a perfect example of it. So tremendous effort on the part of the fish program to go through all of the rules in this three-year cycle and present the simplification and to you three sitting at the table and everyone else who's been involved in this unsimple process of simplification. My thanks. What I wanted to return to were the urchins and sea cucumbers. Another point, it must be really a drag to schedule a meeting and have nobody show up. So I'm sorry for that happened. But I do have concerns with cucumbers and the urchins. We're actually restricting that sports fishery from what it was previously, both in terms of limits and also limiting areas where these species can be taken. It seems very unusual to me to actually have rules that change to a more restrictive rule and not have anybody show up and protest it. And I kind of brought this up before. I'm just hoping that we reached everyone. And that said, that we ensure that we reach everyone with this rule change, because it's a considerable restriction in terms of the take, and just need to make sure. As I mentioned before, it's a fishery that I know sea cucumbers at least are very popular in Asia, and so I'm concerned that we have ethnic minority groups that might be consuming this fishery who maybe haven't been as well informed, and I just want to make sure that that happens.
Okay. Yeah, we did our best at outreach with several meetings. The packet went out to a listserv of recreational harvesters. There's a couple iterations of the proposals on the department website. We also reached out to our recreational crab and shrimp advisors with proposals for discussion and dispersal, hopefully. It certainly is a valid question as to, why didn't anybody show up in light of what the rules describe? I don't have a very good answer for that. But to follow up on the restriction part of things, I think, yes, the proposal is to, in streamlining daily limits, is to streamline them to a lower daily limit. But I think it's worth pointing out that the proposed limit would still be 18 of each animal per species per day. Staff opinion that it's still quite ample. The existing daily limits were set some time ago. We have better information now, better science, better understanding of the status of stocks, and we also have some reasons for some conservation concern in with some species. We've implemented a number of conservation measures, for example, in sea cucumber. In the sea cucumber world, and some areas we still haven't really seen a really good recovery response, and so for these reasons, we think going with the lower daily limit is probably the best course.
Yeah, or maybe I certainly appreciate that and support the conservation efforts. It's just a concern with communicating and making sure that our users are understanding this rule change, so that nobody's being unnecessarily impacted by it.
Well, we are committed to evaluating that and making sure that going forward and with this that we are reaching as many folks as possible. Since we met in October, some of the discussion items that we've had internally to that effect include making use of internally available language resources, exploring developing signage and notification on site at some of these popular recreation areas, and the formation of a strategically designed advisory committee for some of these other recreational fisheries. We have one for crab and shrimp that functions well and is very, very useful for us. We're interested in exploring how to replicate that model for some of these other fisheries in a way that is reflective of the constituency group that it seeks to serve. And so these are some of the things we're thinking about going forward, and that's born of the conversation we had in October.
Thank you. Great.
I see no other questions. I'm sure Commissioner Thornton is pleased to speak to the motion.
I move to adopt forage fish, marine fish, and shellfish sport fish, fishing rule simplification proposals. So amendments 2, 220, 315, 010, forage fish lawful gear, 220, 315, 030, smelt areas and seasons, 220, 310, 160, daily limits, forage fish and other food fish not otherwise provided for, 220, 300, 040, definitions bottom fish, 220, 300, 130, definition forage fish, 220, 300-370, food fish classification, 220, 330-010, shellfish daily limits, 220, 330, 020, personal use shellfish gear, unlawful acts, 220, 330-040, crab areas and seasons, personal use, 220-330, 070, shrimp areas and seasons, 220, 330, 090, crayfish, crawfish, sea urchins, sea cucumbers, goose barnacles, areas and seasons, personal use fishery, 220, 330-120, clams, oysters, mussels, unlawful acts, 220, 330-150, oysters and clams on private tidelands, personal use, 220, 320-060, general provisions, shellfish, 220-14020, possession limits, bottom fish, 220, 314-030, halibut seasons, daily and possession limits, and 220-314-040, ling cod areas and seasons, and then to repeal 220-330-030, personal use crab pot gear requirements, 220-330-050, crab unlawful acts, personal use, 220-330-060, personal use shrimp pot gear requirements, 220-330-080, shrimp containers, 220-330-100, personal use crab, shrimp, crawfish, unusual act, unlawful acts, 220-330-130, oysters and scallops gear, 220-330-180, squids, octopus, 220-300-300, geographical definitions, District 1, 220-300-310, geographical definitions, District 2, as presented by staff, including that final slide. And I went through the whole thing just to emphasize what an exercise this has been.
Thank you. Thank you so much for a job well done.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
You have a question or a second?
Can I second that?
Okay.
You got to read them.
Commissioner Thorburn made the motion. Commissioner Anderson seconded. Do we have any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Gentlemen, thank you. It's Friday. Yeah. Go ahead.